The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Runes, the 2018 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2018. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
So my name's Keith Bueller, and I am a humanities faculty member at Trinity Classical Academy in California, Los Angeles. And we're going to be talking this morning about virtue. So the ACCS is one of the few places left on earth you can pack a room with a virtue talk. So I'm so glad you're here. I've been so excited to, I've actually been planning this talk since last year when I was attending the ACCS for the first time and learning so much, and I feel like the same way I feel this morning. I went to two sessions, and I've got a lot of notes and a lot of ideas for the next year. So it's very inspiring. And then I attended the Alcuin Retreat in New York, which is Chris Perrin's, one of his organizations, the Society of Classical Learning. I attended that in November of last year, October, and we talked about assessment, and it was just high-level. What is assessment? How do we do it better? How do we make it classical? What is the history of letter grades? Brian Williams gave a talk on that. So I've been thinking about assessment. I've been thinking about virtue, and I'm really excited to share this with you. I did leave time for Q&A, so if you have questions, write them down, and we can talk about them. Obviously, we can talk after as well. Virtue is something for me that's been a topic of interest, personal interest, since college, since maybe before college, reading C.S. Lewis, Mere Christianity. And he's got chapters on the virtues. He doesn't have chapters on, you know, he talks about right and wrong, but he also talks about virtue and vice. And that was a new category for me. And then in college, reading again C.S. Lewis, Abolition of Man. And I still have my notes. I wrote down my little 18-year-old brain. I said, oh, dang it. Ethics is a science. You can't just make it up. It's objective, you know. And so I got an opportunity to study virtue at the graduate level. I did my PhD in philosophy at the University of Kentucky, just finished last year, 2 years ago now. So I had an opportunity to think about virtue and vice in this sort of contemporary conversation. So that's kind of what I'm trying to bring to bear to ask this question about assessment. Okay. You notice old books talk a lot about virtue and vice, right? They don't talk so much about right and wrong. They talk about virtue, not just meaning the chastity of young women, but meaning the manliness of men, right? So at first I thought maybe virtue was a sort of an Athens term, and it wasn't a Jerusalem term. And then I found 2 Peter 1:5. It's been there my whole life. I just didn't underline it. It says, according as his divine power hath given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness. So how many things that pertain to life and godliness? All of them. So not a few left over that he's waiting to give us, right? According as his divine power hath given us all things that pertain to life and godliness, he goes on to say, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue. Arete. Add to your faith virtue. So at that point, he can't be talking about work salvation, right? We've been given all the treasures of godliness, and you have faith. Add to your faith this other thing, virtue. Why? Not because you need it to get divine grace, and not because you need it to have faith, although it helps. Virtuous pagans are a lot easier to evangelize than vicious pagans, vice-ridden. But because perhaps virtue is a means of enjoying the divine grace that we've been given. Perhaps living virtuously and acquiring virtues you don't have or strengthening ones that you do have is a way of appropriating God's grace to you. Perhaps Christ is the virtuous man. And so being like Christ is the pursuit of virtue. So it's right there in the New Testament and in elsewhere. The word virtue is there, which is helpful. But virtues talk about things like the works, the fruits of the Spirit, those are character traits more so than actions. You know, patience isn't something you do. Patience is something you work on acquiring, and something that you have, and you become a patient person, right? Patience is something you are over time. So we'll talk about what virtues are in a bit here. How many of your, just a quick show of hands, how many teachers in the audience? Okay, so we're going to talk a lot about students. How many admin or leaders? Okay. And then who else do we have? Board members? Any board members? All right. Welcome. You guys got your own ribbon this time. That's cool. I love it. How many of your schools have something about virtue in the mission statement or the seal, or, you know, just a quick show of hands, because ours does. How many don't? Just so I can, you know, don't explicitly mention virtue or something like that. Okay. So Trinity, where I work, has in the mission statement, producing men and women of virtue, wisdom, purpose, and courage. And that's, the word virtue is in there, but then there's also two specific virtues mentioned, wisdom and courage. Those are two of the four classical virtues. And there's also this word purpose, which is a really interesting, that kind of harkens to the Greek concept of telos, which means like end, something like end. This purpose, we're living teleological lives, lives that have an end, lives that are tending into a particular direction. My question is, how do we prioritize virtue formation in our schools? If it's there in the official documents, how do we bring it down to the day-to-day? I think that this is going to be a problem for the classroom teacher and for the admin and for the whole school culture to solve. And I'm going to hopefully give you, I don't think it's really a solution. I'm going to give you some suggestions, and I really would like to hear your thoughts or objections or other reactions, because I think it's a problem we all need to put our heads together and to think about over time. It's not a quick one. All right, so here's my thesis. And I did go ahead and put the thesis on the handout, if you have the handout. Someone was going around with the handout. The thesis, basic thesis, is in order to form virtuous students, we need to assess for virtue. Well, how do we do that? In order to assess for virtue, we must do kind of a cluster of things. Define the virtues clearly at all levels. That includes our parents, getting our parents and our families in on the conversation. Illustrate each virtue with examples. Talk about the virtues year-round, not just at testing time, not just at citizenship code time, report card time. Praise virtue in our students. Reward it, talk about it, mention it, name it. And this is the kicker, we have to pursue a life of virtue ourselves. We have to model it. So that's the thesis, so we'll kind of walk through it. My students, who's ever been asked, will this be on the test? Okay, it's like, is water wet? When my students ask me that, you know, I like to say, you know what the final test is? The last judgment, right? And guess what? Virtue will be on the test. Your virtues will be on the final. Because, you know, you can't bring much with you. You bring yourself with you before God. You don't bring your possessions. You don't bring your friends. You don't bring your family. But you do bring the state of your soul at that moment. That's a little, it's a joke, but it's a serious joke. So let's talk about assessment first. What is assessment? Most obviously, formal assessment is a test, a quiz, a reading check, a notebook check, a true-false test. There's other forms of assessment. There's oral assessment. Can you answer this question? Sometimes we do seminar, you know, kind of deals where it's like, I read your paper, but let me ask you some questions about your paper, and your job is to show me that you understand my objections, that you've thought about them, that you have a response. Sometimes we do memorizing assessment. If you think about it more broadly, comment codes are assessments, right? Your student is a pleasure to have in class. Comment code number one, it goes on everybody's report card, pleasure to have in class. Even if there's sometimes a pain to have in class, there's sometimes a pleasure to have in class. But also things like, they show up with prepared. That's an assessment, right, of their preparation, of their diligence. Things like they are respectful and they make contributions. That's an assessment. Maybe there's not a participation grade in your class, or maybe there is, but the comment code is an extra form of feedback. How about awards and honors? Are those assessments? This is a student that we're going to give an honor as they graduate our school so that future schools know they're one of our best. That sounds like an assessment to me. You represent what we want our students to be like. We want people to be like you. That's an assessment of their character, their overall, the way they show up at school. It may or may not reflect their grades. It often does. But it's a different kind of an assessment. So these are mirrors that we put up for our students to look at themselves in, to see how they're doing, what they're doing well at. So I want to think about assessment for this purpose as primarily being a signal, and it's a signal of what really matters. So on one level, the question, will this be on the test, can be a sign of laziness, right? You've taught me 10 things. I don't want to learn any of those 10 things. But is there one or two of them that I have to learn for the test? And you say, yes, here's the study guide. Or you say, I'm not going to give you a study guide. Learn it all. Learn all 10 things. Or you say, it doesn't matter if it's on the test. This is intrinsically valuable. You should learn this. But there is another way of asking that question, which I think is not malicious and it's not lazy, and that is simply, look, you've taught me 100 things in this class, and I have 100 things in my other 6 classes. So I have 600 things to learn. I'm never going to learn all those. Which ones do I really have to focus on? Give me a filtration device. Signal, put a little red flag on everything that I actually need to know because it's too much, I'm overwhelmed. I know at Trinity that's often the comment we get from our students, and even the good students, not the ones who are, overwhelmed. Okay, because they've been playing Fortnite for so long, they don't have time. So assessment is a signal, it's a subtext. We say what's important, and then what we assess for is what they hear is really important. It's a language our students speak and understand, whether they realize it, whether we realize we're speaking that language or not. So at the Alcuin Retreat, Bill St. Cyr, who is one of the founders of the Ambleside Schools, it's a Charlotte Mason school, he said something I thought was really profound. He said assessment, the deepest assessment that students are paying attention to is your face. He says, this is the question students are asking themselves. Do the people I identify with go bright-faced or downcast when I do this? Right? So if a student disagrees with you and you go, they heard loud and clear, ooh, that was the wrong thing to do. That just made, if they like you, right? If it's a person I identify with, if they like the teacher and you, just a little snort, they hear that was the wrong thing to do, right? There's a lot communicated in the breath and the exhale. If they say, Dr. Bueller, I know you said to read it and take notes. I wasn't sure what you meant, so I wrote out like a little summary of the reading. And I go, that's amazing. That's really good. Why did you do that? That's awesome. I didn't say to write out a summary, but that's just a good thing to do. You're a good student. When they see my face light up, right, they go, oh, that's a good thing. That's something I'm supposed to be doing. So sometimes, and the interesting thing about the face is you can't necessarily control it, right? The thing you really value is going to pop out. They're called micro expressions. Like if something, if a mouse runs by, you go, you do a little fear reaction before, well, I mean, some of you might scream, but, you do a little fear reaction before you get your composure back. And so that is a level of assessment that I want to think about today. Are we rewarding or signaling virtuous behaviors by our smiles? Or are we actually signaling, you know what, I talk a lot about character, but what I really care about is that grade, right? What I really care about is you got into that college. What do we affirm? So the question with virtue is, how do we assess it? How do we reward it? And the first part of my answer is we have to define virtues really clearly for ourselves and for our students and for our kind of our whole school culture. The parents should be talking about virtue. They should be asking, why do we study Latin again? As well as, why do you talk about virtues so much? Right? They should be, it's not the kind of thing they can put to a side. So this is a cardinal sin of PowerPoint. Don't put a lot of text on your PowerPoint slides. But it's, I actually put this online as well. The keithbuehler.com/virtues is like a list of virtues, and I actually put a poster up there as a resource for anybody who might want to use it. It's just a simple poster with the virtues listed out, the cardinal and theological virtues. So this is my attempt to be very concise, so it's not necessarily the clearest definition of the virtues, but I'm trying to think, if a parent can read two sentences per virtue, or new hires, you can say, hey, you know, we talk a lot about virtue, and here's a one-page handout to kind of get your mental juices flowing about what we're talking about when we say virtue. I tried to just synthesize a bunch of different sources into a couple sentences. So we'll go through these. Prudence, or practical wisdom, or phronesis in the Greek, is not just about some areas of life. So we think of a prudent person maybe as prudent with their time or their finances or something like that. The prudent person is not easily fooled by marketing or something like that. We tend to think of a virtue in a very specific context. The prudent person or the prudent people are reasonable in morality, career, relationships, and religion. Again, maybe not the best way to put it, trying to be simple. Prudence is a disposition to react in the right way to stimulus that life sends at you, but also to act sensibly in terms of planning ahead. When Christ talks about counting the cost, right? You wouldn't build a house on sand. You wouldn't set out to start a project you can't finish. That's a prudence thing. You may want to do something and realize you don't have the resources for it. You have to stop yourself. You have to go gather the resources before you begin. Prudence in school. How about having a calendar, if you're a student, having a calendar, some kind of way of managing your time, thinking ahead to what's due, and allotting enough time to do each thing before it's done. Some of our students have that virtue, right? Or can express the virtue in school. And some of them very clearly don't. They think, what's due tomorrow? And they try to do that. And then the next day they think, what's due tomorrow? And then they try to do that. And big projects, guess what, aren't due tomorrow. They're due in 3 months or 2 weeks or something. And so they put that off, and then it's like, oh, what's due tomorrow? The big project. And then they ask for help, or they ask for an extension, or they stay up late, or they turn in shoddy work, worse than they could do if they actually worked on it, right? So some of us were imprudent students. I won't ask for volunteers. I was. But no one ever put it in that category for me. Courage or fortitude or Andrea is not just about fighting or military matters. The courageous stay at their post, doing what is right, no matter what adversity they face. So in our modern sort of secular accepted morality, which is broadly accepted enough to put onto billboards, they talk about perseverance, right? Have you seen these billboards that say hope and perseverance and stuff like that? I'm like, hey, look, you can preach in the public sphere. You can preach morality in the public sphere. I didn't realize that. Perseverance in doing good, that's courage. Sometimes it's active courage, like I need to go out and do this thing even though it's hard. Sometimes Luis Marcos points out it's passive courage. I need to stay at my post awake all night No one's attacking, but they might. And me being here requires perseverance, fortitude, strength. So he has, Luis Marcos has a really great, he has a whole book about examples of virtues drawing from Narnia and from Lord of the Rings. It's called Standing on the Shoulders of Hobbits. And he shows you examples of each one, and it's like, do you think moms need courage? Do you think moms need to stay at their post when it gets hard, right? Do you think teachers need courage? I mean, it's not just a fighting thing. Okay, temperance, or moderation, or safrasune, is not just about food and drink. We tend to think of if you overeat, that's immoderate. If you overdrink, that's immoderate. If you don't drink too much or you don't drink at all, that's temperate. But the temperate, in general, remains self-controlled in everything that has to do with pleasure and pain, Aristotle says. So sleep, food, and entertainment, so that less important things do not overrun their lives. The less important sometimes is pleasurable and it can outweigh the more important. So temperance is this harmony of, yeah, when I have a game night, I play games with friends, but I don't have a game night all day, every day, right? Maybe you even play video games. We don't play all day, every day. That would be insane. That would be out of balance, out of priority, right? You have a lot of priorities to balance. So I got into two or three big fights with my students this year by saying things that they thought were wrong, and we got in these big arguments, and it was good. Parents got involved. There was emails exchanged. I study philosophy, so disagreement is just what you do, right? But one of the things I said that got the biggest reaction and the biggest resistance was I said, you could watch too much Netflix. Like, it's possible. Like, it's theory. I'm not saying you actually watch too much. No, I wasn't criticizing them. I was saying it is theoretically possible to watch too much Netflix. And they were like, why? How? No. If all your homework's done and everything, like 12 hours is fine. Binge watching is fine. And I said, what about 24 hours? What about 48 hours? What about not sleeping? I mean, what about a whole week? Like, yeah, your schoolwork might be done, but what about church? What about family? Are you praying while watching Netflix or are you pushing that to the side? You know? So without saying you're watching bad shows or things like that, just there could be too much of a good thing. Could there be too much of a good thing? And they really fought me on that. And I live in LA, so entertainment culture has a stronghold, you know? And I was like, you guys are so steeped in immoderation, you don't even realize that it's a sin, that it's a vice. So there did get personal, I guess. I was like, you do watch too much Netflix, by the way. But it started out very theoretical. So that was a really good conversation to have, and then the rhetoric teacher and I teamed up and made them write in praise of the virtue of moderation and an invective against the vice of immoderation, right? And they were like, very suspicious. I'm in a different class writing about the same thing. But they just had never come across this thought that temperance isn't avoiding bad things, because that's obviously you should avoid bad things. It's the proper balance of good things. And then justice, diakosune. It's not just about fairness. This is the biggest mistake that we make, I think, in our culture. Sometimes fairness is just a synonym for justice. And if you look at the concept, what someone's talking about is justice. But oftentimes fairness is this idea that everyone gets the same thing. And justice is the idea that everyone gets what they're due. It's the just person gives to everyone what they're due. They live in harmony with friends and with society and remain faithful in doing what is right. So that's the, you know, in Plato's Republic, the justice is defined as minding your own business, essentially. So not meddling in other people's affairs that are above you or below you or to the left and right of you, doing your business. And that, if you're doing your business and I'm doing my business, guess what happens? Harmony. Right? We actually live in a social sense of justice. But justice can be a personal virtue as well, not just a social virtue. And then we have faith, hope, and love. Anything you want to say about the four virtues here? Because this is kind of interesting stuff. this is probably review for a lot of you, but maybe this way of thinking about it and putting them together, and why these four. Joseph Pieper, in his book on the virtues, says that even at the time of the Greeks, the cardinal virtues, these are the four cardinal virtues, were not so much argued for as assumed. Like, it was assumed that this is what defines a good person. If you had all four of these, the Greeks thought, then you were clearly, like, successful as a person. And I don't think anything's really changed. I think that there's big, long lists of virtues. You know, some of them are short, some of them are long. These are just thought to be the foundation or the basic virtues. I mean, you could have other lists. It's not like there's something magical about these are the only ones. But they do seem to be pretty comprehensive in capturing our intuitions about what a good person is like. These also, yeah, they capture our intuition. So if you work backwards and say, who's somebody in my life I admire, a hero, and you work backwards and say, do they have these qualities? You know, see if that works. You'll find there's quite a lot of overlap. Okay, so we've got the theological virtues there. Oh, my proof text. So I don't pull out scripture proof text on moderation until they've really worked themselves up into this. Like, no, moderation is not a virtue. Moderation is not a vice. But there's a time for weeping and a time for laughing. It's one of Solomon's things, right? He doesn't say how much weeping and how much laughing. He just says, look, there's a time for both of these. If you're laughing all the time in my class, you might be too attached to pleasure. You might be too averse to pain, right? Studying some can be painful, it can be hard. I like to laugh, I like to have a good time, and then we get to go back to the lesson. And so that's an immoderation thing maybe that students can struggle with. So this is the little poster that I made. It's like poster quality. I've got some laminated that are going up in my classroom, and I put the PDF, it should be the right size PDF. If you wanted to print this out and laminate it or order it from a place like postermywall.com, they do posters of anything. And just having this up is going to allow me to talk with my students about the vocabulary and maybe some of the definitions. And I've got a more detailed one that has examples on it as well. So like for prudence, you could have Solomon. For courage, you could have Daniel, right? You could have biblical examples. Dante has this great convention in the Purgatory where for each virtue, there's a biblical example and then like a Roman example or a Greek example. So it's like kind of Athens, Jerusalem, all the way down. Okay, so here's the question. How do we assess virtue? And there's a lot of problems with the idea of assessing for virtue. There's a lot of objections that someone might have, like, are we being judgmental if we talk about our students' virtue? Are we going to discourage them and bring them to despair if they, if we tell them harsh truths, right? Like, hey, your imprudence is really affecting your schoolwork and it's going to affect your life more and more. You really need to get better at this. How are parents going to feel about us commenting? So I want to address some of those questions, but I want to just talk about what I mean by assessing for virtue first. So the first idea is that I don't think that all assessment is written and all assessment need to be written. So I'm not talking about letter grades or number grades or anything like that. It seems like the wrong category for talking about virtue and character. But maybe conversational assessment, oral assessment, a back and forth, asking the student, let's go down the list of virtues and you tell me how you think you're doing. Like, I'm not gonna maybe even respond. Just I want you to think about what prudence is, tell me what you think it is, and then tell me how you fall on the scale of really, really imprudent to really, really prudent. Just to get them self-reflecting, right? That would be a form of assessment that shows them, we think this is really important. And if they say, I don't know what prudence means, I say, okay, well, let's go back to the definitions and let's look at those in more detail. That would be what I'm calling conversational assessment. It's not quantitative, but it's qualitative, right? So how do we do, sometimes people say, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. Well, so how do we manage something you can't measure? Well, you can measure, just not with numbers, right? Like, you know, like I'll say my dad is a very loving person. Is he more loving than that person over there? Yes. How much more loving? Like how many loving units? No, it's not loving units. It's just, you know, there's a quality, just like brightness and dimness. Like you can tell when something's brighter. But, you know, they made up lumens, right? They made up a quantitative scale for amount of light. But you don't need that. You can see this one's brighter than that one. So we could encourage ourselves and our students to think about, hey, how can you become more moderate? I know you're moderate, but what would it look like to be more moderate? How could you practice that virtue? It's also not an on-off switch, right? It's not binary but analog. It's not up-down. It's the dimmer switch. Once it's on, you can push it up to get brighter and brighter. So I don't know if I would ever tell a student, you have this vice, the end, right? It's more like, hey, on the spectrum of vice to virtue, you're down here. You need to get more virtue up here. Brighten up the justice. It also shouldn't be just occasional. I think this is a hard one. This is something administrators can weigh in on. But we can't do testing and finals and SAT all the time. You know, it's like these things take over our school, you know, finals week or SAT testing. We can't, and then comment codes go on the report cards, which go home to the parents, and the parents are, you know, getting all their complaints out all at once at the end of the semester. Well, the teacher wasn't fair, you know, and so there needs to be check-ins maybe in the middle of the semester or once a month or something where it's not lost, it's not drowned in the practical day-to-day of getting our school done, sports and everything else. Maybe there would be check-ins. What we do at Trinity is we have a once per year parent conference, and I think it's end of the first semester, but we don't have an end of second semester parent conference. So it kind of has to do a lot of things, right? Any concerns for your student? What are their goals? Like, how are they doing in that geometry class? And there's a lot going on. So maybe something that's just a check-in about character goals, right? What virtues do you want your child to be working on? How can we partner with you in that? You don't know what the virtues are? I'm glad you asked. We have this resource for you. You know, talk about it in your family. And so it'd just be a check-in to put it on the forefront of people's consciousness at the beginning of the year or maybe middle of the first semester and another check-in later. I'm still thinking this through. And finally, it's not just something that you teach, right? We shouldn't have virtue class, I don't think. I think that it needs to be modeled in every class. Virtue is something you are when you're asleep, right? Aristotle says that the virtuous person is still virtuous when they're asleep. They're not activating those virtues. Just like you can still speak English when you're not speaking English, right? It's dormant, but you have that capacity. And that's the kicker. So one thing that, you know, I think administrators already do when they have to intervene on discipline issues is they're giving students assessments of their character. So we had an issue in our school. Some students were misbehaving. We said, hey, why are you doing that? And they, you know, where did you get this? They had a vape or something like that on campus, you know, a vape pen. Where did you get that? Oh, we got it from these five other students. Uh-oh, okay. Let's go have conversations with them. But pretty soon it was, hey, did you know about this other person doing it? Oh, no, I had no idea. Did you know about this other person doing it? Yeah, they knew. It's like, okay, well, now we just caught you in a lie. So I'm going to give you a little assessment of your character, right? Be honest. First of all, don't do anything wrong. But second of all, admit it. Just suck it up and admit it. And say you're sorry and don't act nonchalant about it, right? Some of them were like, oh, yeah, I did that. Sorry. Well, where's the contrition? Where's the sorrow? Where's the compunction? So our administrators were giving lots and lots of assessment of character in that. And even giving little tests, you could say, I'm going to give you a chance to tell me the truth. The students who take it, you know, get bumped up in your mind. Like, ah, that was good. You may have done the stupid thing, but you also owned it really quickly. And you were honest, and that shows me some good things. So one of the, you know, social assessments that I gave this year as a teacher was I have a student who has a strong sense of justice. So she complains if something seems unfair, right? And she sort of has a reputation for causing trouble because she's always, you know, pointing out maybe something that she perceives as unfair or this thing happened to this other student. And so I tried to flip that on its head and say, she's got a strong sense of justice. Both of her parents are in law enforcement. That helps, okay? So how can we encourage that virtue and apply it in the right way? And so I told her, I get it, you're right. Like, you have a really, really strong meter for when something is wrong. Like, not everybody has that strong of a meter. You know, the bells start going off really fast. That's good. What about, how do we deal with injustice? Right? How did Christ deal with being treated unjustly? There were some times where he corrected the people. The Roman soldier hit him, and he said, "For what crime are you hitting me? If I did something wrong, tell me. If I didn't do something wrong, why are you hitting me?" So he stood up for himself, or he wasn't a doormat. But when it came time to follow through, right, he just was a sheep to the slaughter. He was quiet. So it's not that he didn't notice the injustice. It's that he didn't have to complain about it along the way. So what would it be like for you to notice and hold it inside until after class and say, "I know you said that to that student. Is this what you meant? Because that seems unfair to me, and I really just want to know what's going on." And I can say, "Oh, actually, no, we have a prearranged deal here. You were misperceiving that." And then she's actually a resource for the teacher, where it's like, "Oh, you know what? I did change the policy on that, didn't I? I need to correct that." Now her justice meter is a tool and not just sort of an annoyance. So can you flip the script on that? We had students that were new, right? They were having trouble fitting in. And we gave lots of assessment to their peers about, are you being welcoming enough? Are you teasing too much? Are you posting things on social media you shouldn't be? That's an assessment of character, but putting that in virtue talk would reinforce our mission, right? Because we're already doing it. I don't think administrators can get away from assessing virtue and vice. And that's part of the response to one of the objections is, we're already doing this. We're already smiling when they do things we want and frowning when they do things we don't want. But we're maybe not being explicit about what we want and giving vocabulary and naming it. Naming the vices. Here's what was wrong with what you did. It wasn't just, you know, plagiarism. It was dishonest, or it was unjust, right? Taking something that doesn't belong to you and trying to get the grade that somebody else earned. That's unjust. That's inappropriate in a specific way. I think that our students respond to praise, a lot of them. And so if we're praising virtues, we'll see more of them, right? If they know, hey, the administrator is passing out praise now for this behavior. So that's the kind of direction I want to go. And there is an objection there, which is, do we want people to be virtuous for the praise or for the intrinsic reward? And that's an important question. And obviously with anything, there's a passing off of when you're little, you know, I give my kids little treats for doing things that are good. But eventually I'm going to stop giving them treats and just say, hopefully you keep doing the good thing regardless, right? But it's a signal. It's not necessarily about the praise. It's a signal that this is what we really, really care about. Everybody who's watching. And that's why I think giving out those sort of awards at the end of their four-year career in high school, maybe we could rethink that. This is the kind of student we want you to emulate in their character. We say that once at the very end of high school. Maybe that would be something you say at the first quarter. Like, hey, this person's got the St. George Award kind of badge, or they're a candidate at least for the award. That would be an occasion for the student to be maybe proud. It could be a bad kind of pride, right? So we have to talk about what that means. But we could also just signal earlier, this is a good student, guys. This is a leader. This is someone we endorse. grades, yes, but their character and their ability to welcome other students and their kindness and their obedience and their ability to complain at the right times and not complain at the wrong times. And that, I think, would have a big effect on the school culture if we were rewarding and praising those things explicitly, publicly, early on. One other assessment story that I wanted to give you was from a student who, his name's Gabriel. He's now off out of high school, out of college. This was when he was a sophomore, and he was one of my smartest students. He was very capable. He knew he could follow instructions, get the job done, get the grade. And so he cared about excellence. You know, that wasn't the worry for him, it was get the grade. It was do really well. So one time he used his intelligence as an excuse to be lazy, right? Like, I'm going to get away with this because I know I can. And he wrote a paper that was subpar. It was a final paper. He turned it in. It was good enough, but it wasn't excellent. It wasn't what he could do. And so I just sent him an email and said, I expect more from you. This is not okay. Like, it's actually kind of arrogant of you to just waltz in, write a paper, turn it in, right? You know, I signed this big thing. And so he said, you know, Proverbs 9:8 says, rebuke a wise man and he will love you, right? If you rebuke a fool, you get only hatred back. But you rebuke a wise man and he will love you. And so I rebuked Gabriel. And to his credit, he loved it. And he was like, no one's ever told me I'm proud before. And it was obvious. I mean, you could tell he's a proud kind of a guy. But he was a really good student, and so people praised the good student, and they didn't necessarily say, can you be a good student while being humble? Can you do both? He said, no one's ever told me I'm proud before, and I'm going, okay. And he said, and also no one's ever called me out on doing a good enough paper that wasn't as good as my best, which is a weird category. And it blew him away. He said it was kind of a turning point for him in his high school career. So I was like, oh, wow, I just sent an email. You know, I didn't know it was going to be that big of a deal, but it was the kind of assessment I wouldn't give in class. I wouldn't put, you know, D on the paper. I had to just go reach out to him and say, this isn't good enough. You can do better. What's up with that? And he's referred back to that conversation several times, and every time he sees me, pretty much, he's like, man, that was really helpful you said that. So a little bit of one-on-one conversational assessment. We already do it. You know, teachers already do it as needed. Administrators do it as needed. But how can we be more intentional about doing it? How can we be intentional about underlining the things we say are missional priorities in our schools? So I have some objections here. Some of them I've mentioned. But I want to. This will maybe be my last point here. And then if you want to talk more about objections or whatever, you can. Otherwise, we'll just wrap it up. This is on the idea of modeling. Go back to modeling here. So here's a trick question for you. Who's a better example of Christ-like behavior for your students? Christ himself or you in the classroom? So trick question. So Christ, who thinks you are a better example? Better is ambiguous. Who thinks Christ is a better example of Christ-like behavior, right? Read the scriptures. It's easy, okay? Who thinks you are a better example? And why? In the middle there.
Because you're there. Right? You're the one who they can see.
Immediate. You're there. You're immediate. So obviously Christ is a better example, but if they think, What would Jesus do? They may not come up with anything, but if they think, what would Dr. Buehler do? They probably know what I would do. And if it's not a good thing that I would do, they might imitate me, right? Like, I have to show up the way I want them to behave. And whatever traits, whatever, if it's laziness, whatever I bring to the classroom, they will get that there's permission to have that trait, right? They understand it. I can get away with that. So I have to show up modeling virtue I have to do my best to be Christ-like, obviously pointing to Christ as the archetype and the model. And he's not just, you know, a model because he's actually here helping you right now. But there, I can't ignore the fact that I'm the best that they have a lot of the time. I'm the one that's right in front of their face. So as teachers, when our students see us maybe reading at lunch, talking together, what's this thing say? Learning subjects outside of our discipline, right? I go over to the math department and I bang my head around and I try to learn some, we're learning some geometry together this summer. You know, they're like, oh, so you're still learning. You're still a beginner in some ways. That shows them the behavior we want for them to have. Don't just say, I'm not a math person and roll over. Don't just say, I'm not a Latin person and roll over. But work hard, you know? So I think obviously that the whole idea of modeling comes back to parents as the primary influence. Our families of origin are where we get our notions of right and wrong, good and bad. Parents also often set the tone for how much, you know, grades matter, college admissions matter, how much these things matter. But we can work with parents about the school culture and say, hey, this is really what we want the school culture to be. And as much buy-in as you have to that, you know, work on that in your family system, right? Pursue virtue, show your students a life of pursuing virtue at home, and then they'll come to school and they'll see it hopefully with us, and then it'll just seem normal, right? So that the little virtue handout, you know, is one of the things I'm going to try to give to my students' parents this semester and see if it's helpful. Some of these are untested ideas, but the general idea is we have to put virtue in examples from literature, from scripture, in front of their minds, in their imaginations. It has to be everywhere they look. We have to assess for those behaviors, rewarding virtuous deeds, praising it, putting vices that problems our students are having, putting them in virtue categories as much as possible, saying that's why it's bad, and here's the virtue that's obviously opposed to that you should be going for, not just stop misbehaving. What does that mean? And most importantly, and this matters whether our students follow us or not, we have to focus first on ourselves. Edwin Friedman, he's a psychotherapist, a business coach, he says, children rarely mature past the level of their parents. Right? Our students are rarely, like Gabriel, you know, maybe would just shoot past me. But our students are rarely going to grow past us as teachers and administrators. We're the ceiling. And if we can inch ourselves up a little bit, we create this huge potential for our students to be called to a life of pursuing virtue. So we'll be done for there. Thank you. So I don't know if we're doing Q&A, if you guys want to just go. But we have 10 minutes, at least what was slated. Is it end at 12 or 12:10? 12. So is it 12:10? So yeah, so we have 10 minutes. Feel free to go. If you have a question, toss it out. The talk is the appetizer. The discussion is the main course. So I would love to hear some objections or thoughts, things that you have in mind. And feel free to, you know, just sidle out, whatever. It's almost lunchtime. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I think so. I think, I mean, what would that parent say if you said, well, plagiarism is not allowed and that's dishonest, so we're going to definitely comment on dishonesty, and they go, oh, well, yeah, well, of course that. But our morality is a personal affair or something like that. So I think it'd just be a conversation of defining terms. Well, what do you mean by morality? Like, I'm not going to subvert anything that you're doing at home. I'm not going to actively, you know, Socrates was accused of teaching children to disobey their fathers. I'm not going to go actively teach them to disobey you. I want us to be on the same page about the terminology we're using at home and at school. So what are they going to say? I don't want my child to be a virtuous person. You know, if there's that much of a mission, you know, it like, well, that's virtue is in the mission statement, you can say. That's what we're doing here. So that's the conversation, I think, is at the level of vision. Does that address it or no?
Yes.
I think it could be definitely a misunderstanding of terms. So it's I'm not saying you're bad, your family's bad, we're better than you. I'm not saying any of those things. I'm saying we are trying together to pursue wisdom. That's why we go to school, not just to know stuff, but to become wise. Don't you want to be wise? Don't you think you have at least a little bit of wisdom? We're trying to improve that together. Yeah, it's not more virtuous than thou. Yeah. And people are sensitive to that, right? And it's like, no, I'm a schmuck, right? Like, let me list you my vices. I'm not saying I'm the best qualified to teach your child virtue. I'm saying they're stuck with me. And so we have to do the best we can. Just like my kids, my biological kids, you know, are stuck with me. They don't get a choice of fathers in a lineup. And so I have to do the best I can to be a good father. And then, you know, they'll fill in the gaps when they get old enough to go find a mentor that has some strengths I don't. And that's why we have big faculties, right? It's like, thank God that I'm not their only teacher. You have a question? So it's live and in process. That's why I'm so happy to be here to see, you know, if some of us can start to implement. I do my own thing in class, but I realize that it's a culture thing, right? And the culture is, it's a big ship, it turns slowly, right? You can't turn an aircraft carrier around on a dime. So what we're doing, myself and one of the other faculty and the principal, the upper school principal, is we're rewriting the comment codes to include some virtue talk. So the comment codes are very bureaucratic, right? Good citizen, like what the heck does that mean, you know? I think they're invented by some committee back in the 70s, and we just use them because they're there. I don't know where these came from. So what about... exercises intellectual courage, right? In other words, they pursue the truth even when it's hard. And we'll have little definitions and things like that. There's some resistance to the idea of replacing comment codes with the virtue stuff, and so we're still talking about that. But it's an official check-in twice a year. Hey, this is a list of virtues that we care about, and we think that your child is maybe improving, maybe not yes or no, virtue or vice, right? Because it's not that simple, but maybe improving or needs improvement, right? Like, because, I mean, how much prudence do we expect out of a 14-year-old, right? You have some imprudence. Surprise! But are you growing in prudence? Are you more prudent? Are you age-appropriate, maybe even faster than age-appropriate level? Are you improving? So I think that would be the kind of encouragement, hopefully, that we could give is sending the comment. In the comment codes, they always come back with questions anyways. Well, what does this mean? You said they were sometimes disruptive. I didn't know about that. What does this mean? So it's more of a conversation point, you know, growing in particular virtues. And so that's something we're doing, like meeting this summer to talk about implementing in the fall. And the head of school is on board. You know, she's like, yeah, we say virtue a lot. We kind of reward virtue with our awards. But what's that check-in? It's kind of up to the teacher by teacher thing. So if you want to change the school culture, maybe you implement together. And that requires talking about virtues, defining virtues. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question about, have you had any experience or do you have any advice or suggestions for kids?
Right. Yeah, so the question's about physiological, the substrate under those behaviors sometimes is out of their control, right? So... I mean, one thing is improvement, right? So we have, at Trinity, we have the Imago Dei School for students with special needs of the whole range. And some of the higher functioning autism and autism spectrum, we see improvement, and we're like, you know what? You're actually ready to be mainstream back in the school because you've managed, with a whole lot of hard work, you've managed your condition such that you can perform in a regular classroom. That's not necessarily the goal, right? Because the Imago Dei School is its own thing, but it does happen, and we recognize that. The other thing would be virtues are, especially courage, are about pushing through whatever resistance you happen to face, right? So it's not, everyone needs virtue, but not everyone needs the same amount of virtue just to go about your daily life. If you're living through starvation, you need a certain amount of courage just to go through the day. I might need more courage just to endure my child crying or something all night. You know, there's different circumstances. So it's like giving a child with special needs or with some other like struggle, giving them vocabulary to say, you have extra work to do, but guess what? God sees every ounce of effort. Just because this student seems to be more moderate doesn't mean they've actually worked for that moderation as much as you have, for the little bit of moderation you have. So it's almost like rewarding the effort and not noticing the effort as much as the final result. If you could, by the time you graduate, be able to focus and sit still and attend, that's going to take you a lot of work. And God sees that that took more work for you than it did for the average student. So that is hard. I mean, it's hard not to discourage, right? Hey, you have a special burden. Oh, great. That's discouraging. It's like, no, it's a special burden and a calling. Other thoughts or questions? Concerns? It's a tough thing. Virtues, we don't talk about it very much in the culture, right? So there's a kind of a lot of rights talk, but not necessarily, yeah, virtue talk. Yes.
Do you do much of that at your school?
Well, we do sometimes in the writing, you know, assignments, like we're going to do a praise of wisdom, and the students are like, well, what's wisdom? Oh, I'm glad you asked, right? And so that's an occasion. I don't think we do enough. And I think that, you know, that's why I tried to put them up on the board, is because I don't think if you asked me, okay, I just read some Aristotle, you know, tell me what all four virtues are in the brief definition. I don't know. I'm still kind of trying to put this together. But so I think as faculty, we need to come to an understanding of what virtues are. In contemporary ethics, they talk about virtues being dispositions, right? So when you rubber has a disposition to bounce, right? It's not always bouncing, but that's how it reacts when you throw it against something. So justice is a disposition to give what's due and maybe to demand what's due, right? For you. You're not always activating that disposition, but there are circumstances in life where you need to give somebody what's due, and that's where justice is sort of activated. And Aristotle says, how do you acquire the virtuous character trait? You do the deed one time. Just like, how do you get a good tennis serve? You serve a bunch of times, and you start getting it better and better and better thousands of times. So we could talk about that with students and say, you know, virtues have to be acquired over time. They have to be, they're personal, they're dispositional, and then, yeah, have them write essays. We could give them more resources to understand. Again, I don't want to make it like a virtue class, but I do want there to be virtue content where it comes up naturally. You know, where if you're reading Cicero, well, he wrote a whole book about the four cardinal virtues in the De Officiis, on duties. So maybe we need to be more intentional about assigning those kinds of things, giving ourselves occasion to talk about the virtues, then doing a regular classroom assessment. What are the virtues? How do they work? And then, oh, by the way, this is the merit awards that we give out for virtuous behaviors. Does that kind of, like a whole life cycle, would that address it? Because sometimes it comes up in the curriculum, but we don't actually like sit and talk about it. By the way, these are some virtues. Yeah, Intellectual Virtues Academy in Long Beach does. It's a whole school called Intellectual Virtues Academy. So it's a public school. Yes, please, ma'am.
I'm also noticing that of those expanded and
fourth quarter. first quarter. Around Christmas. How much turkey and how many red and green colored M&Ms did you have? Yeah, so third quarter for justice. I like that. Yeah, it's a natural fit.
I was kind of following up on that. We're working on it in our grammar school. I'm doing a virtue of the month. So that a lot of the things you're talking about would be more upper level and practicum. So we, you know, the more that we talk about it at a grammar level, by the time they get to logic school and rhetoric school, they should know what prudence is. So we've gone over that on a yearly basis and talked about it at a virtue. Much more practical level.
So virtue of the month, so you get to repeat virtues, or do you add to the list of the basic four?
We're working on that. Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's really neat. I mean, that could work at the upper school level, too.
You can't really wait until they get to logic school and say, oh, by the way, let's talk about number.
Right, right. And there are good children's books, you know, on virtues and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, a poster that says prudence, and it's got a big picture of somebody who's prudent that is incorporated into a lesson, and it stays up all year. I mean, it has to be visual, right? And there has to be a story to it, even for adults to retain it. So that's why I'm starting with just the words, and then I'm maybe going to build out. There's lots of classical statues of here's prudence and here's, you know, courage and stuff like that, and they have cool symbols. But I'm just trying to get the vocabulary and then maybe build up. In the back? Sure. Grammar school kids love to catch you in a contradiction. It's time to be quiet, kids. You're being loud. So I think that's great. I love that. It has to start somewhere, right? So starting with a biblical story, starting with a fairy tale. What are the virtues? Well, let me give you a list of virtues. Can you point out one or two that you see in this character? Starting with their favorite Disney movie, starting with something that they already know, if you want to talk about the virtues. And then at some point it needs to, like you said, be personal. Like, notice a virtue in a friend, or tell me about who do you think is in your family is prudent, and who do you think in this classroom is courageous, and things like that. So you have to kind of personalize it so they don't think it's just a lesson out there, but it's an expectation on their behavior. Because they know that you have expectations of their behavior, and if they know there's these things out there called virtues, and you connect those two, then that's going to have a profound impact on the culture, and it might, like you said, it might last with them through logic school, and become a part of their life and their self assessment. Last thought.
Just to share, our grammar school, we do a virtue of the month. It's
the industrious otter.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, but no, that's great because it's memorable and it connects with all ages. I mean, really, it's like it's not like adults don't need stories and don't need images. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, and I think that the virtue of the month could work really well with like chapels, where it's like vice is the kind of thing you need repentance for, right? So if we're going to talk about convicting or addressing real problems that are happening in the school or real character issues, and you can say this vice, if you have this vice, okay, big deal. Repentance is where you turn around and you stop acting out that character trait that you may even have. It may be with you for a while. You have to act against your character until you can turn the boat around. And you could bring that into chapel. You could bring that into devotions in class. You could bring that into the whole school culture. I love that. All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you for coming.